Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, December the 30th. This is our last show of the year with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. So we're going to look at the media and President Trump. A little controversy here over the last week about, you know, the president going to Iraq and all the controversy about that. There's also some controversy about the First Lady's boots. That's always a matter of national security, isn't it? But it's just amazing. It's just amazing what how the media is treating this president. And I'm wondering if people are just fed up with it. I happen to be fed up with it. I'll tell you that much. The Democrats are about to take over the House. In fact, they will next week. And you have to wonder what's going to happen with this party. There's just a lot of crazy cases, head cases, in this party. So we'll talk about that. Foreign policy. You know, Bill and I talk a lot about foreign policy, but the country doesn't seem to be interested right now in foreign policy, and that could change in a heartbeat, literally in a heartbeat with something happening somewhere around the world. Illegal immigration, a big topic with voters, according to a new poll. Climate change, a big topic with the governor of California. Quite a few things going on. So let's say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill is 42 in Dallas. How is it in New York?
Well, actually, it's reasonable here. I don't know what the temperature is. It's you know, as a writer, I don't go out very much, only when I have to. I think it was in the 40s today. I was out getting a last-minute holiday sale of a couple of things I was interested in, and then came back, and it was perfectly fine. We are anticipating the usual New York New Year's Eve tomorrow night in Times Square, but there is a great deal of apprehension. The New York City Police Department is really making extraordinary preparations, extraordinary preparations for New Year's Eve. And we just hope everything goes well. But they really
Yeah, we do,
because
that's a big part of, the whole country watches that event.
Yes.
You know, when the ball comes down from New York, that's a big deal for the rest of the country. Do you remember back in 1999, 2000, when there was also a great deal of concern about security and Governor, or at the time was Mayor Giuliani, had lots of security on the streets and it turned out to be okay? I'm assuming they're doing the same thing now, Bill.
They have a lot of security, and they also have something that I really thought was quite remarkable and very inventive. They have embedded police detectives with hotel guests and hotel staff. Many of the hotels in New York, excuse me, I don't know if it was based on a tip or not, but they want to know all the staff members so that if somebody shows up and says they're a hotel worker and they do not look familiar, the detectives who are embedded will immediately realize it. Apparently, there are many terrorist attacks, terrorist action shootings that begin in hotels or which have hotels along the way. We remember the Mumbai attacks involved a hotel, as did the Las Vegas attack here in Las Vegas, Nevada. And they are really inside those hotels apparently weeks in advance. So I am assuming there was some kind of a tip or some kind of an intelligence analysis that indicated that might be an area of concern, but they will zip the place up pretty thoroughly.
That's good.
That's very, very good. I think that we are letting our guard down a little bit nationally. I have to give the president a little bit of blame for that by not emphasizing foreign policy enough. Of course, the Democrats are not in any way interested in foreign policy.
Right.
They don't even know there's a foreign country, except for Honduras. Have you noticed how Honduras has been in the news? all the anguish coming from, I mean, when's the last time you saw a story about Honduras? I mean, all of a sudden they're so concerned about the conditions in Honduras. My goodness, I mean, how could anyone not allow all these people into the country? Now, I feel for these people. I really do. You know,
sure.
We should point out these are human beings. We are, you know, part of a Judeo-Christian ethic.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be concerned about them. But the politics around it is so ugly and so phony, so absolutely
mm-hmm.
fraudulent. You know, and now I see Peter King in New York. Who was a terrific congressman, by the way, real straight shooter, and guy who's always been big on foreign policy. Well, he made a statement, and he talked about these very tragic cases of these two children who died
mm-hmm.
in custody. But he made the point, he said, children die in inner-city projects all the time, and nobody
mm-hmm.
cares. He's now
well,
been
Chicago.
Accused of race. Absolutely.
No, Chicago.
Been accused.
I mean,
yes,
how many children die there every weekend?
Absolutely, and Baltimore. And immediately, Chelsea Clinton, of all people, comes out and accuses him of racism, which is
yeah.
now going to be the standard line. I mean, there's no
right.
other issue. Racism, misogyny, that's the Democratic Party is now based entirely on identity politics. There are no
that's
proposals.
It. Well,
you know,
that's
no
it.
Plan
no,
for
that's
America.
Other than you're either if you disagree with them, you're a racist. I mean, that's
oh,
about
absolutely.
That's about the extent of it. But the situation down in Honduras has been actually these Central American countries have always been. And I remember talking to my late father-in-law who lived in Mexico City, and he would say to me, you know, Mexico City is bigger than the entire Central American population.
Wow.
These countries are very, very small. They're very small countries, and they've always required some kind of foreign support. And for a long time, what kept the order in these countries was they had basically a right-wing dictator running the country who kept the order. But people worked. Everything was okay. But it's gotten out of control here recently. But I'm not sure that there's anything the United States can – I mean, you don't solve their problem by taking their people.
No,
I think that's a big mistake, and yes, you want people to come up here. My family did, but there has to be some kind of an orderly fashion. But as long as we're talking about Honduras, you wrote a post here today talking about illegal immigration, and how all of a sudden that's pretty important with voters.
Yes,
and then you begin to wonder why is President Trump talking so much about the border wall. Maybe he knows something that the left hasn't figured out, though.
Well, I think he does. You know, I keep on cautioning my readers at Urgent Agenda never to underestimate President Trump's political instincts. That mistake has been made before, and the Democrats have regretted it. They're all sitting around gloating over their 40-vote victory in this election, and we congratulate them. But they forget that in Barack Obama's first midterm, he lost over 60 House seats. We're not reminded of that too often. And the president, who may not be doing all that well on the polls, is still pretty much where other presidents have been, like Barack Obama, who've then gone on to win re-election. So it's impossible. Look, I don't predict the future at Urgent Agenda. I never have. It's not a good idea. But it's going to be a very tumultuous 2019, obviously. Very, very raw, very mean-spirited. The Democratic Party, I think you're quite right, by the way. I think their House majority may just implode. It's a very fragile majority in the sense that they, I think,
right.
what is it, 20-some-odd votes? And many of those
well,
votes
they,
were actually
they were down,
moderate.
Bill. Yeah, they were down They were down 24. They were down 24 on Election Day. They picked up 40. So I think they're somewhere. I've seen that they have a majority of 235, which is basically 17.
Yeah,
it may be 18 because there's always a recount going on. Let's give them 18. Let's give them 18.
Yeah.
Well, if you give them 18, that's not exactly a big majority historically speaking.
No.
And on top of that, 20 of those new representatives were elected on the basis that they would not vote for Nancy Pelosi. So.
Yes.
If she's got a majority of 18 and 20 of them are saying they're not going to vote for her, I don't know how she gets to 218. I mean, I don't know what kind of a trick they're going to use, but I would hate to be the Democrat in one of those districts who promised not to vote for Nancy Pelosi, and then the very first official action he takes or she takes is to vote for Nancy Pelosi. I mean, that's just not a good way to get started, Bill.
No, it's not. And one of the things that has to be pointed out is that California as a state plays a very important role in all this, because the California delegation is the biggest. It's also one of the most radical. California is moving its presidential primary up by a few months in 2020 to have more influence, and their delegation will be the most influential in Congress. And the California Democratic Party is slightly to the left of Nikolai Lenin. I mean, they really are. They wouldn't even renominate Dianne Feinstein, their own senator, because she wasn't left-wing enough. Now, she did it on her own, but the fact is that a lot of people around the country don't come from California. They're not part of the California delegation, and they're Democrats. And I don't think they're going to fall on their sword for Nancy Pelosi and her crowd. I really don't.
Well, California has, I believe, my numbers could be off, but not by a lot. They have, I believe, 52 representatives in the House, 52 I think it is, and it's like 40-12, I mean the balance, it's like 40 Democrats versus 12 Republicans. So that, right there, that's your majority in the House, California, 28, a plus 28, that's pretty much your majority in the House. And like you say, these are very left-wing candidates. I just see a crash, and you're beginning to see it already, Bill. I'll give you an example. I think I sent you this. I think, in fact, you wrote about this. The Women's March, the famous Women's March that's supposed to happen in January, they shut it down in California, and the reason is hysterical, but at the same time really sick. They say that it's too white, that there are going to be too many white women marching. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, let me get this straight. We have a country where 72% of the population
is
white.
Can't say straight, Silvio. You can't say straight.
Yes.
If you say, you're going to, I'm going to report you tomorrow morning.
That's right. Well, I'm a member of the Knights of Columbus, so I'm already in trouble. I'm an extremist.
Oh, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I interrupted you with my
No, no, but I mean, I know. I appreciate your getting that in. But I'm just saying that how do you say that a march is too white? How do you say it's too much of anything? It's supposed to be a women's march.
That's right.
And yet they're looking at the skin color of the people. These people are crazy.
Yes, and also there apparently is great concern and great anguish in the Democratic Party over the fact that the top three potential presidential candidates who are polling in the top three positions are all white men, and they're going crazy over this. That this can't be, we can't have a party like this. I mean, this party has nothing to do with the Democratic Party. This is just basically a new party based entirely on people's characteristics. Has nothing to do with who's the best qualified. I mean, they say, oh, for goodness, Kamala Harris, why? She's a woman, she's black, she's Asian, she's a threefer. They don't even talk about the qualifications any longer.
That's right.
It's become
it's ridiculous.
Side issue.
It's ridiculous. Qualifications, I guess, as long as you're 35 years old, you're in, Bill.
That's right.
That's all that matters.
And
I
even
guess,
that, there were some Democrats who were urging, Evita Perón here in the Bronx, our new little Evita, who clocks in with $5,000 outfits, and they were urging her to run, even though she's 29. Now, how
right,
can you
I mean,
run?
It's absurd.
Well, they will just say, we demand. I mean, we demand. And we want her, and the people should have their way. There was an interview a couple of days ago with the nutbag mayor of Oakland, California, who's a real left-wing Democrat. I mean, she is crazy. And she is proud of the fact that she doesn't cooperate with ICE, even though apparently there was an incident in the area in which somebody who evaded ICE through her efforts committed a crime or something. I don't recall the exact details. And she says, well, the law does not follow our values. Well, she doesn't even understand what rule of law means. If you don't like the law, try to have it changed. Legitimately, go to your legislators and try to have it changed. Her attitude is you just break the law because these are our values.
Well, but that's such a double-edged sword, Bill, because other people have different values than she does. So what if they say, well, in our city, you know, we're not going to do this or we're not going to do that. I mean, then it's no longer a country. Then it just breaks up into different countries, I guess. And but I mean, California is really an amazing thing. But I really believe, Bill, and predictions are tough to make, and we all take a certain risk when we make a prediction, but I'll take this one because I feel pretty confident. I think this White House or this House majority is going to implode. I don't know how you keep these people on the same page. I mean, I think this young woman from New York is going to demand airtime. She's going to get it because, you know, there's a story that Doug Schoen, you know, the Fox News contributor, told Mrs. Pelosi that she needs to rein in the young woman from Alejandro, I think is his first name, Ocasio-Cortez. She needs to rein her in.
That's right.
Good luck with that. I mean, that's like telling LeBron Braun that he needs to play basketball and shut up about everything else, Bill.
Look, she is going to be a star because the press wants her to be a star. She's very attractive. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know anything, but that what does that matter to the modern press? And also, the defeated senator from Missouri, Claire McCaskill, Democratic senator,
mm-hmm.
was talking about her a few days ago and just said, you know, she's the bright new thing, but I don't see what's there. And immediately, Cortez, or whatever her name, you know, I call her Evita, immediately mm-hmm. became angry. She called me a thing. No, she didn't call you a thing. She simply referred to you as the new thing, which is an old expression. But this girl, first of all, she gets offended at everything. And she really does believe that she is now the queen of the Democratic Party. And she's 29 years old.
Well, maybe she's more like a princess of the Democratic Party, but not the queen. I mean, that's a... But she's nothing but a media creation. Look, let's give her credit. She beat an incumbent, and I guess you get credit for that. You know, let's give her credit.
Well, yeah,
but
not too
she
much.
She hasn't
though,
been exactly the smartest.
No.
You know, she hadn't been the smartest person in the block, Bill.
No, and by the way, when she beat the incumbent, it was in a primary, and the turnout was 14%. I mean, she won with 8% of the Democratic vote, of the total number of registered Democrats in her congressional district. There was almost no turnout. That's why she won. But she's given all this credit, and she wears clothes very nicely, very well tailored. I wish I knew who her tailor was. Her shoes are always shined, and I'd like to know who's paying for that. I really do.
Pay the rent, but she sure has very good clothing.
Well,
kind of a curiosity of mine.
Yes, either she has a sugar daddy. Oh, can't say sugar daddy. You have to say artificial sweetener daddy.
Yes.
And either she has that.
Or parent. You can't say daddy. An artificial sweetener parent.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Either she has that or she is borrowing the clothing from designers, which is a legitimate thing. They, you know, movie stars do it all the time. But
mm-hmm.
that raises question as to whether these designers have an interest in some of her votes, especially on trade policy. So, you know, but no one is going to ask. It's going to be the same thing as with Obama. Nobody ever asked him a serious question because they were all afraid.
Or with Beto, Bill. Remember Beto down here in Texas, when he would go out on his speeches and hit President Trump for having signed a tax bill that benefited the top 1%. Not a single reporter said, okay, Beto, that's a good line, but doesn't that include your father-in-law? I mean, are your kids, aren't your kids part of his family, your wife part of? I mean, it's like they don't ask Democrats questions like this. And that's the frustrating part, Bill.
Well, that is. Because, look, the press is a left-wing press. I don't think there's any question. I don't even think they're denying it anymore. They see their role today not as reporting the news without fear or favor and informing us about each administration. They see themselves as having a higher purpose of making
mm-hmm.
a difference, to create a more equitable society. That's not their role. Their role is to report the news. It's the role of the editorial page to argue for positioning.
Right.
And we're losing that in journalism. And I think the American people are aware of it. I mean, CNN has become almost obscene in the political. It's a joke. There's
a guy
I've been seeing over the holidays, which I guess he's the holiday anchor or something, or they bring him in, you know, from, you know, some asylum. And he has been just going after Trump like nobody's business. And they don't seem to care. They really don't. And as you have pointed out many times, they go after Melania Trump, who actually is quite popular. And they attacking her. No women's magazine will give her a cover. even though she's a beautiful first lady, because they are now completely politicized.
Right.
Totally.
Well, the other day, I mean, and look at the – you're talking about CNN. Look at this trip to that President Trump made to Iraq. Now, I remember when President Bush went to Iraq for Thanksgiving, and it was – the whole thing was secret, too. Now, of course, at the time, there was more of a war going on, so – but still – you know, I think during the day they were bashing President Trump for not going to see the troops, as the president was literally flying to see the troops, Bill.
Yes,
and I'm just sitting there saying, I mean, what's wrong with these people? I mean, why would they even bring that up? And it's like, I cannot believe, Bill, that I'm the only one who picks this up, or you and your readers.
You're not.
I mean, other people have to be picking it up.
You're not. And what's amazing also is that these news organizations who were bashing him for not visiting the troops are the very same ones who demean the military all the time. It is simply remarkable to see their hypocrisy, about which they feel no guilt, none whatever. I mean, these are the same news organizations that disparage military action, that disparage our allies, that bash anything involving national defense, and yet all of a sudden, and for 50 years, showed not the slightest interest in the threat of Russia. Only when it became an issue with Trump did they suddenly become Kremlin haters, you know? I mean,
That's right. That's right. All of a sudden, they're really worried about the Kremlin and their influence in America elections.
I'm sitting here
saying, wait a minute, if Russia influenced American elections, let's assume for the sake of argument that they did. Well, didn't that happen in 2015, 2016, when President Obama was in charge? Why aren't they blaming this on President Obama for not picking it up, Bill?
Because he is Barack. He came to save us. He came to save us, and that's it. I mean, you cannot say anything negative about Barack. He is the man who we attribute our existence to. We also believe that he saved the earth. He did say that he would push back the waters, and you'll notice that we haven't had one city flooded ever since Barack Obama, and that he would make us safer. And we all feel much safer today because Barack's around. Somebody made a point, by the way, today, which I thought was devastating. I think it was the president. I think the president tweeted that around Barack Obama's house in Washington is a big wall.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to think a wall works.
He thinks it works.
Yeah.
Barbara Streisand, too, has some big gates around her house California.
Sure.
And so does I'm sure the Pelosi household has a lot of gates around them with lots of people with guns to protect them. And look, by the way, I don't criticize him for that, because there are safety concerns when you're the ex-president. But I wouldn't be running around criticizing walls when I live behind them, Bill.
That's right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, walls do work. They work all over the world. That's why people build them. Gates work. That's why people build them. It is amazing to me the hypocrisy of these individuals. Two children have died in our custody, and that should be investigated, of course. But the fact is that if we had citizens in this country who were dragging children on a 1,000-mile trek, we would accuse them of child abuse.
Right.
And they could be convicted.
That's right.
But these are refugees. I think we talked about this off the air. They're from Honduras. When is the last time you saw a story on CNN about conditions in Honduras? All of a sudden, Honduras has become the monster country of the world. And I never saw one story about Honduras.
No, and Honduras, unfortunately, has had a lot of problems. It's a complicated issue because I'm going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about that and also the shooting of the police officer in California, because that kind of ties in a little bit to the sanctuary cities.
Oh,
but,
sure.
Honduras is a country – Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, these countries are having a lot of problems these days, a lot of violence, and I don't deny it. A lot of it is related to the drug cartels, because the drug cartels have taken refuge in those countries, in large part because the Mexican government took a very tough stand against the cartels, and they didn't necessarily drive them out of Mexico, but they drove enough of them out of Mexico, and they're basically operating out of out of these small countries in Central America where they can survive. And a lot of the violence is related to that. So, I mean, we're indirectly responsible any time we consume illegal drugs. I think, in a sense, we're financing these cartels, and that's, you know, that's what I always tell young people. When they're using these drugs, you know, you're financing these cartels. But that's part of the explanation. It's always been a poor country. But you're right. All of a sudden, we're very concerned about it. And it does make you wonder, where were these Democrats when President Obama was in the White House? Because they had the same problem back then that they do right now. Let's take a little break, Bill. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about that shooting in California of the police officer. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is the last show of 2018, Bill, so that just means that the next time we chat, somebody is going to be running the House, Democrats, and we think it's going to be Nancy Pelosi, but as we mentioned before, it's going to be a close vote because 20 Republicans ran against her during the campaign. They're part of that majority.
20 Democrats.
20 Democrats, you're right, yeah. If I was a Republican, I'd vote for Nancy Pelosi. I mean, having Nancy Pelosi as a speaker is the, I mean, that's the biggest plus for us that we can have. But let me get back to California for a second and the violence, sanctuary cities and all of that. The mayor of California said of Oakland said she had no regrets over talking to or warning people that ICE was coming. This young man who allegedly killed the police officer in California, and our sympathies, by the way, with the family of the police officer, Bill. They have a five-year-old son or five-month-old baby son.
Yes.
Gosh, I mean, you look at that picture and it just breaks your heart. I mean, five-month-old. I mean, police officers are always going to run the risk. I understand that. We've had some here in Dallas. But when it's an illegal immigrant, it makes you wonder how it happens. But it turns out that this illegal immigrant who allegedly killed a police officer is part of a larger gang. And I'm sitting there saying, if I was California, I'd be embarrassed that they've captured a guy who turns out to be part of a much larger gang. It's like, how many of these people are living in California, Bill?
Well, that's exactly right. But I suspect many are living in California because the California Democratic Party, which runs the state, is an extremist party. It really is. It is, I think, probably the most extreme Democratic Party in the country. And they just don't care. And if you say a cop was killed, they may mouth a few words, but the fact is they have contempt for the police, and they really don't deny it. They regard the police as the enemy.
Well, that situation out there is amazing because I think many of these criminals, I was having this discussion with a friend of mine the other day, and they always come back to you and they say, well, but not all illegal immigrants are murderers. And I say,
no,
well,
of course not.
Of course not. I mean, there's, I don't know how many, 11 million people in the country who are illegal immigrants. I'm going to guess that 99.9% of them are just working and going about their business and not engaged in any kind of crime. But that's not the point. That's not the point. The point is that one of them did kill this police officer, and now we're learning that this young man was apparently part of a larger group. And I don't know. If I was the governor of California, I'd be asking for an explanation. I'd be saying, how can we have people like that living in our cities? I mean, the sheriff of this place where the police officer was killed, I mean, he was pretty furious. He was saying, look, they're not letting us do our jobs, Bill.
That's right. That's right, and people are dying because of it. And their attitude is, well, you know, very few people are dying, and after all, there are a lot of Americans who commit crimes. Look, this is what we can expect if the Democrats take over in 2020, and we've seen a preview of it with Obama. He had a racialized Justice Department. His immigration policies were terrible. I'm about to sneeze. Can't do it. there it is. Okay, his whole attitude toward the police was so terrible. The murder of police officers in the United States has gone up dramatically in the last few years. And you take a city like Baltimore, which was ravaged by the Obama Justice Department, they can't even get people to patrol the streets. It's a It's a terrible situation. And in fact, I think the mayor of the city said this is Murder City, and nobody seems to care. Nobody seems to care.
No, and nobody seems to care apparently about, you know, all these children who are being killed in Chicago. You know, we go bananas over these two children. And that, look, it's any time an 8-year-old dies,
of course,
it's a horrible thing. I mean, there's I don't know how else to describe it, but it's horrible. But look at the shootings in Chicago almost on a weekly basis. I mean, we almost hear about some little boy or girl. And that apparently, I mean, you know, I don't know, that apparently doesn't seem to upset them. Or if it does, I think they tend to overlook it because it doesn't meet the narrative, if you know what I mean.
That's
Bill.
Exactly
the narrative
right.
Is, you
a
know,
human life
so.
On the left is only important if it serves a political purpose.
Well, that's about it. That's about it. I think you're exactly right about that. But you mentioned that. I want to get back to this point you wrote about today, Bill, about illegal immigration, because it kind of ties into sanctuary cities. A lot of Americans are very concerned about illegal immigration, and it's not because they're anti-immigrant. It's not because they're racist. It's because they want to see immigration in an orderly fashion. And that's what I think it's all about. It's not that they hate immigrants. Look, I'm an immigrant, and I like to see people come to the United States and have the opportunity that I had, or that I have. But I mean, I like to see that happen legally, and I like to see it happen orderly. When we came to the United States, and you know the story, when the Cubans came here, you know, we had to go through a certain door, and we had to be. Yeah, you know, we had to answer questions and so on. Now, the Cuban situation is a little different because a lot of us had family in the United States who would assume responsibility for us, so it's a little different. But still, you know, my mom and dad had to answer questions about who they were and so on and so on. And we came here, and you know, I just think that Americans want to see illegal immigration done away with and legal immigration, or at least replaced by some legal means, Bill. I mean, I'm kind of talking too much, but you know what I mean. It's not that they're anti-immigrant. They just want to see some kind of an orderly fashion, because we're all immigrants, I guess, in a way.
Yes, unless you're a Native American, you're either an immigrant or a descendant of immigrants. But you know, our people and your our family and your family came here under law. They came here through the system, went through all the examinations, went through all the documentation, and that's what Americans want. They want a legal process. You can't have a process that is half legal and half illegal. I mean, what do you say if you're going to allow illegals into the country? What do you say to the people who do it legally? You're a sucker. You're a fool. Why don't you do it our way? Talk to Nancy, and she can get you in without any documentation at all. That's what happens. The rule of law breaks down, and if it breaks down over this, it's going to break down over other things as well. You know,
that was the old
broken windows theory of policing in New York, that when they started to crack down on minor crimes, they realized it would have an effect immediately on more serious crimes because the criminals knew the police were getting serious.
Right. Well, look at, again, I'm going back to California and the young man who's accused of killing the police officer. I don't know whether the police figured out or knew that if they would have arrested this young man, that would all of a sudden bring in a bunch of other people, but apparently it has.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's a ton of people that were involved in these illegal activities. Also, there's another point, too, that gets lost when we talk about illegal immigration. And, you know, if you're in the country illegally and you are working, you're breaking the law to begin with, but you may be using false documentation, which means you're using somebody's Social Security number.
Oh, yeah.
And that in itself is breaking the law. I mean, you're potentially hurting somebody else by using their number. So, I mean, in order to live in the United States as an illegal immigrant, you have to break a bunch of other laws. So, you know, I guess some Democrats don't care about that because they see voters. I guess that's all I can say, Bill.
Well, look, I think that the Democratic Party sees the illegal immigrant as a source of votes, as you pointed out. They see them because they are now a group-based party where each group is supposed to contribute a certain number of votes. They see that as the future of the Democratic Party because it doesn't have any other future.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's interesting about that, and I'm sure you saw it in the paper this week, was
sure.
The report that in this recent election, the Hispanic vote was 33% Republican.
Mm-hmm.
That is
quite
a remarkable figure. Now, if Trump can get it up to 40, and I think he can, that really challenges the whole premise of the Democratic Party.
Right. Well, one of the points I was making, Bill, in talking a few weeks ago that we were talking about, the Democrats have been very successful in keeping all of the elections in Hispanic majority districts, particularly in the Southwest. I'm not talking about Florida because that's a different situation. But in the Southwest, they're able to maintain the conversation strictly about immigration or DACA or whatever. Because when they talk about that, they tend to win. But when they have to talk about abortion or family values or the economy, they're not as strong in those areas because Hispanics are basically very conservative and have, for the most part, a very good work ethic. So I think that if President Trump can somehow, if they can deal with this DACA thing and get it done and get that off the table, and hopefully that can be done through the wall funding, you know, a deal for that. Give us the wall funding and we'll give you DACA. I would do that bill in a heartbeat. That then removes a point of conversation, and the Democrats can no longer blame the Republicans for DACA. And then we can talk about the economy and abortion. One of the amazing things to me, Bill, going back to Beto, is that nobody brought up the fact when he was running for governor or for senator, well, Ted Cruz tried to, but he can only do so much. Nobody in the media would ever ask Representative O'Rourke to explain his vote for abortion after 20 weeks.
Yes.
That would have been deadly in South Texas. Look what happened to Wendy Davis in 2014.
Yes.
So it seems like, you know, getting back to my point, that the Democrats enjoy talking about immigration because that's their winning hand. And that's why, I think they do well with Hispanics here in the Southwest, Bill.
Well, I think that's probably true. And you can blame the press for that, and you can also blame the Republican Party's ineffectiveness. They can kind of pick up an issue and then they drop it, and they don't pursue
right.
it. They don't work on it. Look, the 2020 election is going to be brutal. That's assuming Trump is in office, and he may not be. I mean, there is a possibility that he will be. I don't think he can be removed from office unless there's proof against him that's so overwhelming that Republicans, can't resist it, which is what happened, by the way, with Nixon. I mean, they really had nailed Nixon. But assuming Trump is the Republican candidate, I mean, he is gonna go for the jugular immediately. He always does, and I don't know what the Democrats are gonna do. They know they will have the press behind them, but the public, I think, has already discounted the press. I mean, they see what the press is doing. You know, if you're going to be corrupt, at least do it intelligently. You know,
that's right.
I mean, they're so heavy-handed about it that I think they've kind of lost support. Now we don't know what Mueller will come up with. We don't know if there's something, a bombshell waiting to explode. There usually isn't. After 2 years, we probably would know about it by now. But let's see what happens. We also don't know what's going to happen with the economy. If the economy starts to tank, it's going to be a very bad situation for the president. That doesn't mean he will be defeated, but it could be a bad situation. You know, one of the things that people tend to forget, and the press never reminds us, is what an election is. It's a contest. It's like a sports contest. It's between people. It isn't just a vote on one person. They talk about the president's approval ratings and popularity ratings. They're almost meaningless unless he's matched against somebody.
Right.
One of the things that we ought to remind ourselves of is the fact that Trump never ranked very high in popularity or in likability. The way that he won was the fact that Hillary Clinton ranked even lower. I mean,
that's
people
right.
really didn't like her, and that is
no,
what cost
didn't.
Her the election. And she doesn't
that's
understand
right.
it to this day. She thinks
no,
it was really the...
the
she thinks it was the Ruskies. It was the Ruskies.
Right,
you know,
something.
I mean.
But Bill, one point I wanted to make about the economy, it may turn out that Trump is lucky in this sense, and I'm going to use a Reagan analogy. You may remember this. Reagan lost 42 seats in 1982.
Yes.
It was not a good night for Reagan in the 1982 midterms. He kept the Senate because. Well, most of the guys were not up for re-election, but he was not a good night for him. And as the economy was entering 1983, the economy was still pretty slow. And it wasn't until really the second half of 83 and into 84 that the economy took off. So this little, no, I wouldn't call it a bump, you know, but this little issue with the economy right now, if it looks better at the end of 2019 into 2020, then Trump is safe. I mean, this correction in the market, I mean, a year from now, people will forget about that if the market comes back. So in a way, it may be good to have your economic downturn now when there's nothing on the line, Bill. I'm just comparing it to Reagan because I remember in early 83, I was in Mexico City in early 83, and I was at a party, and I remember a gentleman who was at the party, and we were talking about Reagan, and he said to me, you know, if Reagan is reelected, and at the time, it didn't hit me, but I remember that because there were concerns about Reagan being reelected because of the economy at this moment in 1983, or this would have been 82 into 83, Bill.
Yes. Oh, absolutely, there were concerns. And in fact, if you remember, Reagan did not do well in his first debate against Walter Mondale. He didn't even seem to be present. And there were really concerns that he was sliding. In fact, I think some polls had Mondale ahead, but that's not an uncommon situation in election polling. What has changed since then, aside from the fact that there are now more minorities in the country in terms of voting power in the Democratic Party, what has changed since then is that even though the press has always been liberal, it is today so liberal and so contemptuous of the Republican Party and of Donald Trump that it's got to be worth something. Trump will have to fight very, very hard to be reelected, but he could be running against a very weak Democratic mm-hmm. candidate. Now, I don't regard O'Rourke as a weak candidate. O'Rourke is a charmer, and they will mm-hmm. have to get past that charm, and they can do it, I think, quite easily by pointing out the fact that he's an empty head. And, you know,
right.
I mean, in a debate between O'Rourke and Trump, I think that Trump would probably trounce him because Trump, even though he's not a particularly articulate man, is very, very knowledgeable. And also, he is going to run on a record of real achievement, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
O'Rourke did very, very well on the Senate state level against a man who was not particularly popular, Ted Cruz, even though we like him.
Mm-hmm.
But on a national level, he may fall apart. You know, it's a very different race. Running for president is one of the hardest jobs in the world. And
go ahead. I was going to say there's a couple of interesting stories, too, that I'm going to send you a copy of an article that came out here in Texas that we have a couple of brothers here, the Castro brothers, not the
yes.
famous ones from Cuba, the ones from San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
And Joaquin Castro really wants to be president. He wants to be the first Hispanic president. And he's apparently, you know, he wants to take out Beto. And then you have Sanders, too. I understand they're not happy with Beto either. So before we have a debate between Beto and Trump, I think Beto is going to have to get over the Democrat Party. And I have a feeling that that's going to be crazy, that primary. But also something else, too, Bill, about the President Trump getting reelected. He may very well get reelected in a three-way race. I still believe, and I mean this quite sincerely, I think that Bloomberg goes in. And he goes he's talking that he's going as a Democrat. There's not a chance in the world that the Democrat Party is going to nominate Bloomberg. I mean,
no,
that's not
really
going to happen. I don't.
No.
I mean, at least I don't see it. I could be wrong. So now you have Bloomberg with all the money in the world, and a real desire to defeat President Trump. And he's sitting there and he's saying, okay, I can stay out of this election or I can get in. I think he's in. And if he gets in, then you have a three candidates who are running. And then, you know, you might have, you know, Trump getting elected with 42% of the vote and 400 electoral votes or something like that, Bill. Because he wins a bunch of states with pluralities.
Yes,
I mean, that's just a crazy prediction, but every other prediction is just as crazy, Bill.
I think it's an intelligent prediction, because remember what happened in 1992. Ross Perot, who was a terrible candidate, got 20% of the vote, and that's what cost George H.W. Bush the election. I mean, Clinton wasn't particularly popular. He was a womanizer. I mean, everything about the man was kind of negative. His wife came off as ice cold, and yet he won anyway. And I think his percentage of the vote, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, was in the 30s. But he became the president. And, of course, being a liberal, the press, you know, covered for him. And he went on to a second term. In 1996, when he ran for re-election, the Republicans do what the Republicans always did in that era, and that is they nominated the next guy in line, who was Bob Dole, who had no chance of ever being elected president.
No.
But they
wonderful man.
Yes.
I mean, wonderful man, an amazing human being, and I, you know, respect him a great deal, but he was not the strongest candidate that year.
No,
no question about it. He was actually a very weak candidate that year, and that. By the way, Clinton got 43% of the vote in 1992, which is still pretty low to win the presidency. But the other example, I don't want to go off too much on history, but the other example of a three-way race is 1912, when Woodrow Wilson was elected. He got like 41-42% of the popular vote, but won just about every state because of the Republican Party being so divided. I just think that Bloomberg would divide the Democrats. And I think what would happen
is
the serious Democrats would vote for Bloomberg, and the crazies will vote for Kamala Harris or whoever they nominate.
Well, Kamala Harris, I think, gets her inspiration in politics from the Japanese kamikaze. I mean, that comment she made this week about the Knights of Columbus.
Oh, my
I mean,
goodness.
What is the purpose of going after somebody's religion? You know, what possible purpose could there be? Well, of course, we know it because she was trying to reassure the crazies of the Democratic Party that she would abort almost anybody. You know?
That's right.
She wants to abort the whole country.
In the interest of full disclosure, I've been a member of the Knights of Columbus for much of my life, and my father was a member, and it's a Catholic men's group, and that's all that it is. We do primarily a lot of church activities. We're the ones who cook when there's a church activity. We're the ones who cook. We're the ones who clean the grass in the church. I mean, we're basically just a bunch of guys, you know, doing good things at our churches. But for us to be called extremists, I guess because we're anti-abortion, pretty crazy, Bill.
Well, Kamala Harris, have you ever heard her speak? I remember watching her when it was televised on C-SPAN or whatever, sessions of the Armed Services Committee. And she had to read all her questions. I mean, she's not the kind of a person who really knows the subject. And the only thing she was ever interested in was gender integration of the armed services, gender this and gender that, and how many women do you have here and how many women. You know, the purpose of the Armed Services Committee is to oversee the national defense of the United States. And she didn't seem to have any interest in it. I mean, she's really she's not an airhead. I mean, no one's accused her of being an airhead, but she is really a left-wing Democrat.
Right, she's a very telegenic lady. We got to give her credit for that. She's probably pretty well spoken, and she looks great on TV. She's sort of like a California Beto, if I could put it that way.
Yes,
but she's not very deep, and I think in a debate with President Trump, I think he would defeat her soundly. But again, there may be three people on the stage. I'm convinced that Bloomberg is going to be one of them, and Bloomberg will get a lot of votes because I think there's a lot of people who respect him. I respect Bloomberg. I mean, I wouldn't vote for him, but I think he's a serious man, Bill.
He is a serious man. He's dull as can be, and he is much too involved in climate change and in guns. I mean, he kind of – I don't know how – on national issues, how well informed he is. He ran a pretty good administration here in New York. It was an honest administration, and people respected. He was elected three times.
Sure.
People respected him, respected the way he did things, and that it's probably the most important thing to say about him is that he's respectable. You know, people will not be ashamed. I don't know who the first lady would be. I think he has a girlfriend or something, or a pal, or somebody who he pays. I don't know what it is. He has a strange family life, and he's a billionaire. He founded Bloomberg Communications. Very bright man. Quite old in terms of presidential races. I think he's in his mid-70s. But the only thing I think he would do, if he ran as a third-party candidate, is he would take votes away from the Democrats. I don't know if he wants to do that. I don't know if he doesn't like Donald Trump. He doesn't want to be the one to elect Donald Trump. I don't know if he has the guts to run for a third term. We don't know if he has the guts to run for any term. He's like Mario Cuomo, who for years debated whether to run for president, and then he died, and after that he didn't have any debates at all.
Right.
You know,
ironically, his best chance probably would have been 1992, the year that he decided not to run. I mean, Mario Cuomo, that is. Bill, we're just about out of time, and I did want to go back and ask your opinion about this. I think the biggest story for me of 2018, and there is a crazy year. I mean, there's lots of stuff that happened, from gun shootings to school shootings. That was a very crazy year. But I think the Kavanaugh story for me stands out as the most important one, because it seems like it showed the best of the Senate and the worst of the Senate. Yeah, by worst, I mean some of these attacks on Kavanaugh that were so over the top. The senator from New Jersey, the senator from Rhode Island. I mean, these people are just nuts. And then on the other hand, you had Lindsey Graham, who I thought that was his greatest moment, Bill. And I think when he stood up for Kavanaugh, I thought that was fabulous. So that's why I think it's a big story, because we see everything that is wrong with the Senate, and then you see a lot of good people who in the Senate, like a Lindsey Graham, Bill.
That's exactly right, and I think that was, as you say, his great moment. And I think he has come into his position as a very important U.S. senator. He is the last of the group of who were known as the Three Amigos, Joe Lieberman, Lindsey Graham, and John McCain. Of course, John McCain has died. Lieberman is out of the Senate. And Graham is kind of alone. He doesn't have a partner on national defense in the Senate right now. We thought Kelly Ayotte would be that partner, a female senator from, I believe, was it New Hampshire, and she was defeated a couple of years ago. So he really operates alone. And I think he has done a remarkable job in the last year of, being a good Republican, critical of the president at times, but very supportive at other times. And, in fact, there's a big story about him today having a long meeting with the president on Syria today. And he said he came out somewhat reassured that the policy has, more substance than he had thought. Important senator. I don't know if he has a future beyond the Senate. But what we need is more people like Lindsey Graham who are active and out there fighting. And that's what we're going to need in the next couple of years.
And who have a way of communicating with people. Because, I mean, look, Senator Cornyn here of Texas is brilliant. He's up for re-election in 2020. He probably will be re-elected. I don't think that he has a problem. But he doesn't have that folksy style of Graham.
That's right.
Graham, it's like you look at him and you imagine all of those, all of those Southern senators from over the years, the way he talks and all of that. And I think that does connect with a lot of people. Bill, as we look at next week, I know this next week is going to be a short week because of the holidays, but it's always suspense with President Trump. What do you see this week and into the next week, Bill?
I see a lot of returned Christmas presents.
That's right.
I see reports on the retail market over the holiday, which is very important. It isn't just a number. It means the employment of a lot of people.
And it did well, though. The numbers, the early numbers that I saw were good.
Yes, the numbers were good, and especially when you factor in the online buying, which is now,
sure,
I think it's going to be most of the retail economy in a few years in terms of big items. I also see the continuation of the shutdown, which we have to mention,
mm-hmm,
that it is continuing,
yes, yes.
And the president is holding. He's holding,
yes,
his position, and I think it's the Democrats who eventually are going to have to cave.
They
don't want to come in.
They
don't want to come in on a shutdown. And then we have every other issue. You know, every other issue.
That's right.
The anticipation of the new Democratic House. The people at CNN are going to faint. They're going to, you know, what easy questions can we find for these people? They're going to be able to photograph Evita in the Bronx on her congressional salary. And that's, look, everything, every week from this point on is going to be exciting because we are really in a time of clashing politics and,
right,
and real antagonism. And
right,
while it's interesting, it's also in some ways dangerous, but it is interesting.
Well, it's exhausting too. I think what,
yes,
what I think why a lot of people are tuning out a lot of this stuff and simply not paying attention to it, and that of course works for President Trump, particularly all these investigations. Well, Bill, have a wonderful new year in New York. Watch the ball come down, all the celebrations. We'll be watching it too. And lots of Americans will watch what happens in New York. I mean, the great thing about celebrating or watching you guys celebrate in New York is that's the first place that goes 2019. The rest of the country comes an hour later or a couple of hours later. So when you guys hit 2019, then we formally know it's a new year, Bill.
That's right. And I look forward to speaking with you in 2019. And
yes,
I think we have a lot of excitement to look forward to.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I agree with you. Have a wonderful day, and as always, thank you for your time. It's always a lot of fun to get together with you.
My pleasure, and Happy New Year to you and your lovely wife and your family.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Happy New Year's to you as well. And to all of the readers of Urgent Agenda, I know that Bill puts the link on Urgent Agenda. We also thank you for tuning in and listening and hearing the podcast. And to all of you, Happy New Year. And the next time we chat, I guess it'll be 2019. Hard to believe that, but it's 2019. 2019 just around the corner. Wow, who would have believed that a few years ago that we'd be talking about 2019? But here we are. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Bye-bye, everybody.